is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, brought to you by CLNS Media and the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and a happy holidays and a happy new year to you, Adam, and to all the listeners out there as well. We're in between Christmas and New Year's right now, but football season comes at a bad time for the holidays.
Yeah, and it'll be, there'll be no shortage of football over the last few days of the next year. So, you know, get on your couch and watch a game.
We have obviously Dante Hightower, Alabama alum, Dwayne Allen, Clemson alum. So there's a lot of talk in the locker room today about the college football playoff tomorrow between those two guys. And, you know, Dante Hightower said that Notre Dame needs all the luck it can get. and he was talking some trash, which was fun. And Dwayne Allen holding a PR session about Dexter Lawrence and that whole situation with Clemson with a few people here today as well. So Dwayne Allen's always rocking the Clemson stuff. He's always wearing Clemson gear, sweatshirts, and stuff like that. And Hightower is obviously very public about his support of his alma mater too on Twitter and stuff. So those two guys were enjoying that. But we also have some pro football to discuss this week as the Patriots will take on the Jets in the regular season finale on Sunday in week 17. But before we talk a little bit about the Jets, we're going to talk about Sam Darnold, obviously, a little bit later in the podcast. But to start with, we wanted to talk and focus mostly on stuff that's going on with the Patriots right now as they kind of gear up for this playoff run that they're, you know, now have clinched and are going to be going on here shortly. And I think that the place to start, Adam, is just that, you know, this is a run-first team in a lot of ways right now. Obviously, it was against the Bills. They ran the ball 45 times for almost 300 yards. So whenever you have a game like that, it's kind of poses the question of, you know, is this type of offense sustainable? And you know, do we think they continue to have this kind of success running the football moving forward?
Yeah, it's it was one of those things that actually I think we mentioned last week that one of the things they can do is try to turn to the running game and see if that can get going. And they did that, and it worked. Now, will that be something that'll work in the playoffs? I don't think so. You know, like I think, you know, there's going to be too many teams in there in the playoffs that will be able to stop the run on first and second down and make you have to, you know, throw on third and long. And I do think it's a good thing that they went that way and that they've sort of established a run and started to forge somewhat of an identity. That offense they had that game looked like an offense that had an identity, which is, you know, something that they haven't had for a lot of the year. So, you know, especially post Josh Gordon, you know, it's something that they needed to do, I guess. And, you know, I think this week will be interesting just to see if they're able to, you know, balance things out just a little bit more, you know, or they might double down and just say, all right, this is what we are now. We're a running team and we're going to, you know, throw off play action and do that. But, you know, in my opinion, they're going to try to, you know, build off that and also try to, you know, balance things out and sort of get Brady going again, because it really isn't realistic to expect Sony Michel to have and you know, James White and all these guys to really just take off every game.
Yeah, I think what the most impressive part about the Bills' performance on the ground was just that the Bills were stacking the box with eight or nine guys and the Patriots were still running on them. Right. And when you have that happen, you know, that's great and positive for the Patriots' offense. And obviously you put eight or nine guys in the box as a defense with really one safety up top and maybe an outside corner or two, you're expecting to stop the run with that kind of defensive front. And the Bills just weren't able to do it. And the Patriots imposed their will in the running game time and time again, doing that against them. And the other thing that I think that's been impressive just schematically, is that they are running a lot of stuff that looks the same, but is kind of just a little bit different here and there. And they're incorporating jet sweeps and Cordarrelle Patterson, or, you know, we saw Philip Dorsett run a few of them as well. So they're attacking teams at a lot of different angles in the running game too. Outside runs, inside runs, jet sweeps, fake reverses, you know, all these types of things that are going into the running game. And they're just kind of making these defenses, the Buffalo Bills especially, were just scrambling the whole game to try to keep up with who had the ball, where the ball was going, what direction they were running in. And when you can be that diverse on the ground, then it becomes more of a sustainable thing to me, because it's not just let's line up and push people around. You know, it's there is some trickery. There is some scheme. Now, how long can that last? I don't know. And I think that ultimately we're both in agreement that at some point in time, you're going to have to make some plays in the passing game to go on a real Super Bowl run here. You know, Tom Brady, even at the beginning of his career, when the Patriots really were a run team, lean on the defense, run the football offensively, Brady still made his throws. You know, Brady still made some plays in that playoff run down the field, especially in that Rams Super Bowl throwing the football. So that's going to be what it's going to have to be moving forward, is they're going to have to be able to find some sort of explosion in the passing game, some sort of go-to option. And maybe it's Julian Edelman. I think that he's kind of, you know, stayed the course, even though the rest of the passing offense has kind of taken a step back, whether it's been Gronk or losing Josh Gordon or Chris Hogan. Julian Edelman's still kind of been that steady guy that's been there for Brady, that Brady can look to. But in terms of the run game, and is this sustainable, and is this what they are now, the last couple of years in the playoffs suggest that they might throw the run game out the door come the postseason. You know, they really haven't ran the ball all that much. I think people look back to that 2013 playoff run and those Colts games that they had in those couple years in the playoffs where LeGarrette Blount just ran all over Indianapolis. And they say, you know, that was, you know, an example where the Patriots were a run team. That was very game plan. You know, that was very game plan specific. And outside of that, they really haven't been that kind of team.
Right. And I think it's something you know, when you're talking about it, doing it in the postseason, there's certain teams that I think it could work against.
Right. Like those, you know, if you have find a team like a Colts team that's softer up front. Then
Yeah. I think you know, but as far as like a, you know, a total team wide philosophy going forward, all right, this is what we're doing from now on. You know, obviously that's a little bit tougher. So, you know, I feel like, I think this week is going to be interesting because, you know, we'll see if they do the same thing again, which I, you know, I'm not sure they will, but.
Well, they ran all over this Jets team last time, remember? Yeah. In week 12, they ran for over 200 yards against the Jets.
Right. But in terms of like, you know, I think if, even though they could do that again, whether or not they want to, in order to just like work on other stuff, I think is something that'll be interesting. So, you know, it's all a matter of, you know, having everything ready to go for the playoffs and, you know, sharpening their passing game, sharpening their running game. You know, just being ready for whatever has got to be the goal. But it's sort of like late cramming for this test.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of all the things that have changed along the way, it's just been a very trying season in that respect in terms of building an identity.
Yeah, I think that the identity – the players are at least trying to say that the identity now is what it needs to be every week. You know, if we need to run the ball to be successful, we run the ball. If we need to throw it, we throw it. And there's really, I don't think that they know exactly what it is that they're going to be able to count on when it's, you know, third in the Super Bowl or something like that. But at the end of the day, I think they feel like, all right, you know, we're just going to get it done. That's our identity, is just win, just find a way to win. And maybe, you know, maybe that can be it. I don't know if I'm really on board with it, but maybe that can be what they do. Let's look at the passing game here for a little bit, because obviously losing Josh Gordon was a huge blow. But even before they lost Josh Gordon, it still seemed like the passing game, especially, you know, in that Pittsburgh game, obviously wasn't where it needed to be. And I think, you know, we'll talk about Brady here for a little bit too, but I think that Brady's struggles are getting kind of lumped in and taking a brunt of the blame, as a quarterback always does, for something that's kind of a systemic issue. It's not necessarily just on Brady. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, because they don't even have a lineup that of receivers and backs and everything like that that's been consistently used the same way throughout the entire season. It feels like it's been going through phases, the offense.
Yeah.
In terms of personnel and usage and stuff like that. So, and you really can't, you know, downplay the Gordon stuff with that, because for a while he was such a, just a, you know, such a dangerous weapon. And then you take him out of the mix and, well, you know, now what do? You know, it's a lot easier said than done to fix things after that. So when you have a group of receivers that either is, you know, missing the first four games of the season like Edelman was, or just shows up and then leaves again like Gordon, and these are major players in your system, it makes for an inconsistent and just like, you know, sort of an ugly product at times. And so, you know, I think that the struggles are not all on him. You know, he obviously has, you know, plays out there that he leaves on the field. But, you know, if you look at the whole totality, the offense as a whole has had issues. And it's just really been a consistency thing for me in terms of, you know, just not having all the same full complement of players at his disposal and things like that.
Yeah, it seems like it's a merry-go-round at the receiver position this year. And I think that the main thing is that at some point it feels like something is letting Tom Brady down, whether it's the receivers not creating separation, the offensive line not playing up to par as to what we're normally seeing. I think that some of the games this year where the Patriots offense and passing offense in particular has struggled have been some of the worst pass protection games of the season. I thought that, you know, against Buffalo, they really didn't pass protect well either game that they've played against Buffalo this year, and then they didn't really pass protect well in Tennessee. So, you know, you have some of those types of games. Pittsburgh, too. You know, Marcus Cannon against TJ Watt, that was a mismatch the entire game. That they had to keep on, you know, sliding the protection or putting a tight end next to Cannon or chipping the running back out. And that just takes another guy out of the passing pattern for those couple of seconds that it takes to make that stuff develop. And now, you know, you look at it and he's throwing a lot of passes to guys like Cordarrelle Patterson and Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett when he's been in there. And you know, how good are those guys really? I think that they're all fine in their roles, but they're role players. They're not, you know, dynamite receivers. And right now, I think the biggest thing is, you know, when you look at this passing offense, if you're a defensive coordinator and you see that Gronk isn't really Gronk anymore and Julian Edelman's still really good, but he's just one guy, who's really keeping you up at night? You know, who's really the guy that you're circling on Monday or Tuesday and saying, we need to stop this guy, or this guy's going to be a problem for us? Maybe that was Gordon, but now Gordon's obviously not here. So I think that, you know, there's really a lack of firepower at times on offense. And over the course of Tom Brady's career, when he doesn't play well, you can often line it up with some of the years where he doesn't really have the great skill position groups that sometimes he does have. You know, 2013, 2006, these are seasons where the receiver position was really in flux. So it's not all on Brady. We'll get to Brady in a second and what we're seeing with him. But I think that a lot of it has to do just with a merry-go-round of receivers, some other guys' plays like Gronkowski's play kind of dropping. And then also when Gordon was here, just quickly, I felt like they were forcing it, not forcing it to Gordon, but they needed to kind of cut down the playbook to let Gordon be able to play. You know, he obviously wasn't going to know the whole playbook. And now all of a sudden, yeah, maybe they open the playbook back up a little bit because guys like Hogan and Dorsett and know the playbook a little bit more, but now they don't have the talent. So when it was with Gordon, we saw the struggles with Gordon. I thought a lot of it had to do with the fact that there was probably only, I don't know, two dozen plays, 20 to 25 plays that Gordon felt 100% comfortable running. So that made them pretty limited. And now they don't have the talent of Gordon, so that makes them limited in that way. With Brady, I think that, you know, we all see, just eye test wise, the stats aren't that far off to what they're used to, what we're used to. But eye test wise, it just doesn't look the same right now, at least with Brady. What is it that you've seen, and what do you think he can turn this around?
Well, I think a lot of it, if we're talking again about guys around him, the pass blocking hasn't been good.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about, and that might also play into the fact why they, you know, obviously why they feel like they want to run the ball a little bit more. But, you know, when he drops back and, you know, he's got in the back of his mind, all right, well, I might not have as much time to throw here. That will always affect a quarterback's accuracy. And I feel like that's basically just what's happened with Brady, is that, you know, he's dropping back, and he knows that, okay, not only do I have receivers who aren't, you know, getting the best separation in the world, but if I get an extra half second here, I might be dealing with a guy right in my face, ready to toss me to the turf. So I do honestly think that happens. It doesn't always happen with him, but over the course of the season, it really has been the case. The last time when I was covering the team where I really saw that was that AFC Championship game in Denver that they lost.
Yeah.
You know, they hit him so much that game that I remember asking him afterward if he, you know, does that affect your internal clock? And he said, you know, basically, yeah. You know, and that, you know, so it's just one of those things that every quarterback at one point or another struggles with. Some guys are able to deal with it better with their feet and stuff like that, and wiggle out of situations and stuff like that. But I feel like Brady this year has dealt with enough pressure that it's had sort of a cumulative effect on his internal clock.
Yeah, it's funny because when you look at, you know, kind of the advanced numbers of the pressure, the Patriots and Brady is one of the least pressured quarterbacks in the league. But then when you watch it and you kind of go with your eye test, it doesn't feel like he has any confidence in his offensive line.
Right.
So obviously that, I think, speaks more to whatever number Pro Football Focus or ESPN, you know, Next Gen Stats is putting on it, right? Because, you know, it's really a situation where you can see it with Tom Brady. His internal clock has just sped up. It just is, and he's not even looking. I mean, in that Buffalo game, he didn't even throw a pass over 20 yards the entire game. Mm-hmm. He's not even looking downfield because he doesn't want to take the time in the pocket to look there. Obviously, the knee injury is something that's been out there. A lot of people have kind of reported that there might be some sort of a knee injury that's going on. That obviously is a factor in all of this, if it does truly exist. But I think the main thing is that, you know, right now, the protection, I just don't think he has a ton of trust in the other 10 guys on the field as a whole, whether it's the protection or the receivers. And in the past, when, you know, things got, you know, down to it and things got messy with the pocket or stuff like that, he had two guys. He had Gronk and he had Julian Edelman to look to, you know, for that immediate separation, for that, you know, hot route or that immediate throw. And right now, he really only, I would say, only has Edelman, and teams know that. And so they're putting a lot of focus on Julian, and they're taking him out with double teams or just rolling coverage in his direction or what have you. And the other guys on the field just aren't making plays. So when you have that situation, it's like, well, where do you go if you're Tom Brady? They're bringing this blitz up the middle. And you know, Chris Hogan is out wide with Julian and Cordero and Gronk, and they're bringing the two linebackers right up at the middle at you. They're doubling Julian. Maybe they're doubling Gronk too. Where do I go with the ball? I throw it out of bounds is where I go with it, because there's just nobody else to go to. Now, I think the one thing that I will say with Brady is that going forward, I would just like to see him throw the open man. And sometimes the open man isn't going to be the first or second guy in his progression, and he's not going to be able to just, you know, get rid of the ball in 2.2, 2.3 seconds, and he might need to hold it for that extra half a second to find that open guy. But until he really starts forcing defenses to cover all five receivers, it's going to be tough, because Chris Hogan's open not all the time, and it's certainly not like Brady's leaving a ton of yards on the field with Hogan, but he's been open a few times, and he hasn't gotten the ball. When Dorsett's out there, when Cordero's out there, when James White is out there, you just he's got to just throw it to the open guy. And I know that that sounds cliche, and it's something that Brady has kind of done throughout his entire career. That's kind of what he always says. I don't have a favorite receiver. The open receiver is my favorite receiver. But it doesn't seem like that's happening right now. It seems like he's locking on to guys a little bit more than in the past. And I would just like to see him, you know, once you start kind of making the defense cover all five guys, then they can't get as exotic with those pressures up front because they have to cover all those dudes. So I think that that's another thing that maybe you can look for with Brady moving forward, and maybe something that comes in the playoffs when he's taking a little bit more risk holding on to the ball in the pocket and taking some more shots against the pressure. But that game against Buffalo, there's a throw I wrote about in the flat to James White where the Bills brought three linebackers on a blitz right up the gut, and Brady saw it and he just said nope and he bailed on it and he threw it right in the flat to James White, who had to make two guys miss to even come close to picking up the first down. And the blitz wasn't even through the line of scrimmage yet, but he just could see it coming.
Yeah.
And the trust of the offensive line not being able to pick it up, and the fact that he just assumed that nobody else was going to get open downfield anyways, he just got rid of it as soon as possible. You can see him catch the ball, and he looks right to James White, and he dumps it off, and you look downfield, and you see Chris Hogan open at the sticks. You see Julian Edelman separate later, a little bit later in the down, and you just see guys get open. And you think to yourself, all right, if he had held on to the ball a little bit longer, he would have had the first down. But instead, he got rid of it because he doesn't trust that anybody's going to separate. He doesn't trust the offensive line is going to pick up the blitz. So it comes and goes. You know, it's one of those situations where it's some of it's on Brady to not do that, but also some of it is on his teammates, obviously, to play better and pick them up. All right, let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. Over the last couple of weeks, I mean, even in Pittsburgh, defense played out of its mind. They gave up 17 points to a really good offense on the road. First really good road performance, you would say, from that defense all year. You would think, is the defense good, or is Josh Allen, this past week especially, a reason why they played so well?
Well, the Bills' offense is bad.
Yeah.
You know, even I was hoping to see Allen challenged the defense a little bit more, but they were just like open guys. It was the same Josh Allen you saw in college.
And his receivers dropped a few key passes too, especially early on in the game.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to really put touch on the ball. Like,
he
throws a 100-mile-an-hour fastball every time, and sometimes it's nowhere even near the receiver. So I wouldn't go by the Bills game. I think even though the defense held Pittsburgh to a low point total, that, you know, the run defense in those three games before and the Pittsburgh game was really bad. So I wouldn't say the defense had really proved as much as perhaps some people would say. I think, you know, It's hard to say. The defense was fine against the Bills, and I don't know how much you're going to be able to draw from this game either. But it's one of those deals where, you know, they have to be able to prove that they can stop the run, in my opinion, against a team that's, you know, good on, you know, throwing the ball and running the ball, and a team that can, you know, really challenge them in that respect. And, you know, they haven't, you know, I think they're pretty capable of putting in a good performance against a good team. I just sort of want to see it, you know, in the playoffs, depending on who they play. I mean, if they end up playing like, a team that is, not exactly explosive, but just good, and they can shut a team like that down, then, you know, then maybe we'll cross that bridge. But right now I'm still sort of, you know, in that mode where I'm thinking, well, if they play a bad team, they can shut them down.
Yeah, I mean, they're average.
Yeah,
they're a good defense.
Yeah,
they're not great. They're not special.
They're not Baltimore's defense.
Right.
Like Baltimore will play a good offense and shut them down.
Right.
Baltimore at Arrowhead had what Kansas City at 24 points through four quarters. That's a good, great defense. You know, that's the defense that can win a championship with a less than stellar offense. Okay, so I don't think the Patriots are that, but you know, if they're, you know, look, if the Patriots are running the ball and controlling the clock and, you know, rushing for 250 yards, then the defense that they had against Buffalo or whoever is going to be good enough because they have the ball and then the other team doesn't. So, you know, maybe that sort of complimentary outlook on it is what plays out over the next few weeks. But, you know, we'll see. I'm still, you know, skeptical as to whether or not this defense can really shut down a good offense.
Well, yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, if you're into statistics, they're 19th in DVOA right now. They're 16th in the weighted DVOA, which takes into account more recent games and puts a little bit of a heavier emphasis on what they've done lately. And kind of takes out some of the September stuff that doesn't mean as much at this point in the season. Right. But at the same time, I think that's fair. 16th, they're right in the middle. And right. I think that this defense is very capable of having a great game plan that leads to a shutdown game defensively, like what we saw against Minnesota, for example. Against Pittsburgh, they kind of went the other way with the game plan, and it was a good game plan to stop the pass offense, but the six or seven guys that they allocated to run defense couldn't get the job done. Right. So. And when they, you know, in that Pittsburgh game, they really had a lot of light boxes and they said, you know, we're going to stop the pass, which they were successfully at doing so, but they couldn't then also pair it with a good run defense because the six guys in the front were getting, you know, just demolished by the Pittsburgh offensive line. So, you know, there's got to be some sort of middle ground there. I think this defense, you know, two things. One, I think they're scheming now more than I've ever seen out of a Belichick defense, at least in the 2010s. A lot of, you know, guys standing around and moving and disguising stuff, that playground defense we see a lot on third down. A lot of that stuff that they're throwing at these teams are actually working and confusing teams, I think. And with their pass rush, you know, a lot of stunts, a lot of blitzes off from different directions. They're not just coming straight at guys a whole lot. And right. And I think that the coaching staff knows that they don't have a Von Miller or a J.J. Watt or a Khalil Mack where they can just kind of let guys just go one-on-one across the board on the line of scrimmage and expect to generate a pass rush on a weekly basis. So they're doing a lot of stuff with scheme in the front seven and on the back end to take guys out of the back end and put them in the pass rush to get some pressure on the quarterback, which isn't something that we saw necessarily, especially under Patricia. He wasn't really a big into you know being a big blitz type team, so that's good news. And I think a lot of the players, Devin McCourty, Dante Hightower, some of the guys that have been around for you know a lot of this decade, were saying that you know Devin McCourty told us a couple weeks ago this is the most scheming that they've ever done in his career on defense. You know, just the most coaching and the most you know game planning specific wrinkles and sending different types of looks at offenses and changing things up and stuff like that, which is good to see. And I think the second thing is I think this is a legitimate secondary. Now, do they have a legitimate pass rush problem to pair with it? Maybe not. You know, Trey Flowers obviously a legitimate pass rusher, but I don't know if the unit is elite by any means. But this secondary, when all is said and done, they're going to be statistically probably a top five or six set group in the league. And they have a stud corner in Gilmore, obviously, who's a true number one, might be an all-pro this year. And then their safeties, even though they've kind of had up and down seasons, are just a veteran group of guys. And obviously, J.C. Jackson has kind of emerged, and Jason McCourty's been pretty steady all year. So this is a very good secondary, I think. And that's something that moving forward, I think they can lean on and be able to kind of rely on those guys to match up against some of these receiving groups that they might have to face in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. I think to me, the big difference between the secondary now and the secondary at the beginning of the season was the emergence of J.C. Jackson.
Yeah.
Because he's good. You know, yeah, he really played well, especially that Pittsburgh game, man. The way he played with Schuster, I mean, if they had come back and won that game, you give him the game ball because, you know, he's absolutely the one who broke up that pass at the goal line. So, I think he's been such a great addition. He gives them a solid number two.
And it bumps Jason to that third spot, and he's a very good three. You know, he's probably like an average two, but he's a very good three.
Right. And so I like, I agree with you there. Like the secondary, you know, it's going to match up better with teams now than it would have, you know, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And Jackson has a big reason to do with that. So you know, you just feel like still that the linebackers are sort of, you know, inconsistent. The pass rush is a little inconsistent. But like you said, in terms of scheming things up differently and getting creative and stuff like that, I think that's a good step that they, you know, like you said, didn't really take so much when Patricia was in charge. I would be optimistic towards, towards seeing a better defensive performance against a good team, given those changes.
Yeah, and it's not to say that they don't have talent on the defensive side of the ball, but when you look at this defense and you say, okay, what's a strength that we have as a unit? Experience and football IQ is probably number one. And just they have a lot of guys, whether it's Hightower or Devin McCourty or Gilmore, or Daron Harmon and Patrick Chung, that are just played a lot of football for this team over the years and are just very experienced guys. And that allows them to kind of do the playground defense where everybody's moving and they can rely on people to get into the right spot, you know, after the snap. And you have this kind of advantage of maybe outsmarting teams. And that's kind of the approach I think that they've taken this year more than in years past, where they've kind of said, oh, we have plenty of talent. You know, we can just line up and play. I think this defense knows that it's going to have to outsmart teams. It's going to have to out-scheme teams and out-game plan opposing offenses. And they've been able to do so. And J.C. Jackson, I mean, I'm going to write about him this weekend. Talk about a guy that just, if you wanted to check the boxes for a Patriots corner, JC just checks all of them. You know, he's a press man corner. He's physical at the line of scrimmage, great jam, great ball skills. You know, he kind of checks all the boxes, and it's kind of crazy to me that a guy like that, it can fall to being undrafted. And just like fit the scheme so perfectly. And as good as Malcolm was here for a while, I think that Jackson has the advantage of maybe being a little bit bigger and a little bit taller than Malcolm Butler was. So he's got a little bit more of the ideal measurables too. So yeah, he's just having him on the boundary opposite of Gilmore, allowing Jason McCourty to bump inside a little bit more and being able to really shut down two passing attacks that have guys that, you know, like a Juju and an Antonio Brown, that's pretty special. So I think that they're in good hands there on the back end. All right. Last thing here that we wanted to get to, got to talk a little bit about the Jets. Obviously not the sexiest of matchups, but my guy, Sam Darnold, who I had as the number one quarterback in last year's draft, miraculously fell to the New York Jets, an early Christmas gift for the Jets back in April.
Yeah.
And, he's playing some pretty good football right now.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the season, he was struggling with turnovers, obviously.
Which I think a lot of people expected him to do early on in his career.
Right, that was the sort of the knock, you know. But and also, it's not like he had any weapons, really. But it seems like he's found something with Robbie Anderson, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Anderson seems like a guy who can turn like a 15-yard completion into a 70-yard one, you know. He's been good. I think the game has slowed down a little bit for Darnold. He was, the youngest, quarterback to throw for 300-plus yards?
He's been the youngest quarterback in a while to start a game and all those types kind of stats.
Yeah, I think he's accurate when he's got time in the pocket. I love his demeanor. You know, it's not like, I mean, he doesn't really get too high or too low after a good play or a bad play. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he's going to be somebody who's going to be good for a long time. You know, I do think though that, you know, obviously being as young as he is, you know, the more complex the looks that he's going to receive, the more trouble he's going to have. I didn't think that at USC they put everything on his shoulders in terms of like reading defenses and stuff like that. I thought some of their stuff was predetermined and all that. So, yeah, I think he's coming along. And I think, you know, obviously at this point I'd say he's better than Josh Allen. I think if there's a wide open receiver along the sideline, Darnold's going to hit him and he's not going to put it to the third row. I'm excited to see what this kid eventually becomes, because he obviously has a lot of talent, and I like his mental makeup too.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about him reading the field at USC, because it seems like since he came back from that injury over the last couple of weeks, Jeremy Bates, the Jets offensive coordinator, has kind of taken on that look, similar look that USC had with Darnold, where he's really only reading half the field most of the time, and he's not going through a full field progression, and it's kind of simplified things for him, and it's limited the turnovers. He hasn't thrown a pick in 3 weeks, and he only has one play that it was almost a turnover, you know, dropped INT type of deal. And that came on an inverted coverage, actually, where the defense kind of disguised the coverage a little bit, and Darnold thought he had Robbie Anderson on a post, but the safety on the backside or the corner actually dropped Dak and kind of read his eyes and almost picked it off. And so I think that, you know, some of the things that you see with Darnold are a lot of design quarterback rollouts, which we saw at USC, a lot of that, you know, kind of getting him on the move, getting him outside the pocket and having him only read, you know, this is option A or option B is what you're throwing to here. And a lot of that kind of stuff has led to Robbie Anderson getting a ton of targets because he's usually option one. So when Darnold's on his first read, he's an incredible quarterback right now. His passer rating is like 136 on first read throws. On any other read, second, third, whatever you want to call it, it kind of gets a little bit more dicey after that. But I think the three things that I've always really liked about Darnold, you mentioned the poise, just pocket poise and presence, and also just big game presence. You just kind of had that moxie, and always had that kind of big game, you know, elevate your game to the level of competition, which I've always really liked about him. The second thing is I think he does have above average playmaking ability, you know, ability to kind of extend pockets and extend plays and get outside the pocket, make throws on the move, and kind of just create something out of nothing, I think does exist with Darnold, maybe more so than Josh Allen kind of runs to run and Darnold runs to throw. So that's something that I think is a little bit more advanced about his game. And the third thing is I think that when he's in rhythm and he's on time, he's a pretty accurate guy down the field. Yeah. It's not perfect yet, but I think that it's getting to be there. And I think that, you know, if there has ever been I thought the Jets really, they traded up to that number three pick and they were kind of banking on the Giants passing on the quarterbacks, and they did. And like getting Darnold at number three, even though it was only one spot higher than he probably should have gone, it was just kind of, it was a godsend. I mean, it was a gift. It was handed to them on a silver platter. And if there's one quarterback out of the last, you know, two decades, whether it's been, you know, Geno Smith and Mark Sanchez and Ryan Tannehill and EJ Manuel, I mean, there's been some bad quarterbacks that in the AFC East, where teams, the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins, have tried to find that next guy to challenge Tom Brady. I think that Darnold could be the next guy. You know, when Brady retires and hangs it up and is all said and done, 5 years from now, Sam Darnold's probably going to be the best quarterback in the division.
Right. Yeah, Darnold's good. And, you know, the big game thing that you mentioned is something I also is really struck by, just because, you know, were you at that Rose Bowl against Penn State?
Yeah. And it was like nothing I've ever seen before at the college level.
Yeah.
I mean, just the level of difficulty on the throws that he was making was insane.
Yeah. And even on TV, I only watched it on TV, but like, it was a stirring performance, you know.
It was like moving. Like, people left that game, and we were all just like, I think we just like witnessed history, you know.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And even that game, I mean, look at what Penn State had on the field. They had the run that Barkley made where he crossed over the side of the field he's doing now in the NFL that you thought would be impossible. You know, that was just a bananas game. But Darnold's good. And I think that, you know, he's a gamer. He's somebody that won't back down from the moment, even when he was playing, you know, sort of poorly at the beginning of the season at times. I didn't really think it was going to break him or anything like that. I think he's just got that solid mental makeup of somebody who can, you know, bounce back from bad play and, you know, not let the good play, like, get to his head.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was week one, right, that very first game against Detroit, where he's on national TV in a night game. It was like, I think it was Monday night, and he goes out there and puts on a show, you know, and it wasn't as clean after that as it was in that game, and obviously Detroit's had its issues, but overall, I mean, that was the type of game that you expect out of Sam Darnold, that when the lights are the brightest, you know, he plays as, you know, as well as you would expect him to play in those types of games. I mean, I think what it really comes down to for me with Darnold is what the Jets put around him. I think he has all the talent in the world and has all the talent to succeed in this league. But, you know, Robbie Anderson's a good player. I like Quincy Enunwa a lot, but they still have to build a lot around him. And also, obviously, there's a lot of rumors around Todd Bowles and his future there. So they're going to have to find the right mix of coaching staff as well, you know, OC and also head coach, to make this thing really go for Darnold. But I don't think that it's going to be a lack of talent and Darnold's part that is going to have him fail in the NFL.
Right.
You know, he's got it all. It's just going to be a matter of, are the Jets going to make it work with him as the quarterback? But I mean, I'm excited to see him. I was excited to see Josh Allen. He kind of let me down.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see Darnold and see what he can do, because I think that if you play defense, you know, if the defense gives up some stuff, then Darnold is going to make you pay. Whereas with Josh Allen, especially last week, he seemed in over his head. Against Belichick. So we'll see what happens. But this weekend, I'm sure with Mass Varsity, you got a lot going on with college football.
Yeah. This weekend, again, we're going to be doing some recruiting stuff. There was obviously the weirdest, probably bowl thing with.
Yeah. BC. What's your quick take on that?
Well, I already wrote a column on it, but it's just really unfortunate because for the people I communicated with down there, including, you know, family of players and stuff like that, they what they saw down there in terms of the weather was so scary that they're like, all right, I'm glad my kid's not playing in this game.
Yeah.
From everybody I talked to, they said it was would have been unplayable to play that night. You know, like dark skies, lightning, rain, everything. So that wasn't, but it's just disappointing for the seniors, and especially even the guys that, you know, are going to be going to the Senior Bowl, but also want to show another thing on film of, you know, to these pro scouts that, hey, you know, this is another, you know, good performance you can see. And, you know, just a chance at 8 wins. They haven't had 8 wins since 2009. I think in Adazio's 6 seasons of the Heights, he's gone to 5 bowls, but they've had 7 wins each time.
Yeah.
And now sort of the gods of football have struck down literally a chance to get 8 wins again. Because it looked like they were the, like, much better team than Boise State in those open – I mean, obviously it was only the first quarter, but they were pushing them around on both sides of the ball a little bit. So it's really unfortunate for them. It's going to be tough to come back from, because that's kind of like weird thing that happens that like leaves a really bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting, and maybe, you know, why they didn't, but couldn't they have played the game like the next day or something like that, or rescheduled it?
I don't think so, because you know, it would have been a sort of a logistical nightmare for stuff like that too, because the other thing is like a lot of people had plane rides home that night.
Right.
You know, and so they would have had to cancel those and have another night at hotels and stuff. And there's just so many people involved to get something like that going. The one person I talked to said that they wish that they had started it earlier, like that made it like a 9 a.m. start or something like that. That way that they would have missed all the weather. But even that wouldn't have been like a perfect solution. It's just it was just a crappy sort of thing that happened. And so it's so weird. And it is sort of in line with how weird their season was when they went from 7-2 and having College Game Day at Chestnut Hill against Clemson, losing that and having that be like, okay, well, you're going to lose to Clemson anyway, probably. So that's no big deal. But then they go down to Florida State to play a Florida State team that missed a bowl for the first time in over 30 years. And they lose that in the last minute. And then they come back up here. And I think that Florida State game stayed with them a little bit emotionally. And they just got crushed by Syracuse. So the no 8 wins, you know, all that stuff, when they could have, you know, possibly if they beat Florida State and Syracuse, they could have, you know, and if they had won a bowl game, they would have won 10 games. And it would have been a real breakthrough season for Addazio, the whole program. Instead, it's just, you know, it's very unsatisfying for them.
Yeah, I think someone told me in the newsroom that it was like the first bowl game canceled since like Pearl Harbor or right. something like that. So yeah, it just a crazy situation. But I mean, that does stink. I think, you know, for everybody that traveled to the game, obviously, but the players especially, to not have that chance, especially the seniors, to play in one more game for BC. That does stink. Over at clnsmedia.com, check out my Patriots game plan, writing about Sam Darnold, obviously, this week, and just kind of breaking down what he's been able to do over the last couple weeks that led to a lot of his success and how the Patriots can slow him down to get that first round bye. You know, there is something to play for on Sunday in that first round bye, and then obviously we'll be at Pats Jets on Sunday with full coverage, so be sure to check that out as well. And then you know, playoffs, it's they're back in the playoffs, and here we go. So for the Patriots and a lot of Patriots fans, you know, as you know, this is kind of the start of the season almost. Right. You know, we were kind of expected to get to this point, and now we're going that next step. So Adam and I will be back next week. We're going to do a bye week show, I'm sure, and kind of look at some of the other games and look at some of the stuff lingering from the regular season with the Patriots. And then the following week, we'll obviously know who the Patriots are playing in the divisional round, or if they have to play on Wild Card Weekend, we'll do that too. But hopefully that isn't the case. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Adam Lazar. Thanks for listening.